you know, I'm really excited to be back on your podcast again, but you know what they say about the sequel, it's never as good.
Yeah, this episode's gonna suck, isn't it?
Right.
So if we have to perform an exorcism on it later, make sure you bring a big enough cross.
Welcome to the worst movie I've ever seen in my life, and I can say that confidently. Shark Exorcist.
That's not the name of the show.
Is it The Shark Exorcist?
That's not.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're close.
I'm not good at this.
Welcome to the first podcast. My name's Joe. I'm going to be your co-host today, and with me, as always, I have Lars.
Today we're joined by a guest that you guys remember from before.
None other than our special guest.
Her name is Chelsea Sanders.
Hello, it's the
and
sequel.
And this is kind of, yeah, the stupid sequel to her first episode.
Yay!
For those of us who don't know, Chelsea, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I am the host of the Stupid Sequels podcast, which reviews bad sequels of good movies. You two joined me for the review of the Star Wars Holiday Special. Go check that out. It's hilarious and there's good Wookiee noises in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here to review another not sequel with you guys.
So let me preface this a little bit, by the way. Every once in a while, when I'm on YouTube, I'll see a recommendation for a video by this guy named Vito. The name of the video in question is Why Star Wars Episode 8 is a Complete Cinematic Failure. I kind of feel like every time I come across it, I just want to send him a copy of this movie because I think Shark Exorcist itself actually is a complete cinematic failure.
I thought you were going to say favorite.
I can honestly say that this is the worst movie I have ever seen.
Yeah, when people say this is the worst movie ever or this, you know, Star Wars is the worst movie ever, it's like, no, you mean you don't like it.
Yeah.
Functionally, as a movie, it's good. There's sound editing. There's a plot.
Mm-hmm.
There's consistent costumes and character names. All sorts of things. You just mean
Four
you don't like
that this
it.
This movie is lacking.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is not... The Star Wars series, even the worst of the Star Wars movies, are not cinematic failures. Shark Exorcist is a genuine cinematic failure.
Is it like a student film that just like gained notoriety?
It's not a student film. It's by a director named Donald Farmer. It was released in 2015. It clocks in at about 74 minutes, a lot of which is actually padding.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a full-fledged studio release.
Wow.
Although that question that you just asked makes sense because it does have the trappings of what one might expect from some shitty student film. I can see why you would think that.
Yeah, I mean, before I even started the movie, the 74 minutes, I was like, so is this, like, not a real movie then? Like, this didn't come out in theaters anywhere.
Even the most phoned in of animated movies today that clock in at, you know, 84, 86 minutes, just barely making it to that, you know, not even quite an hour and a half point, are still longer than this. And surprisingly enough, like I said, a lot of it is just filler.
Surprising amounts
for,
of it.
For a tight 74 minutes, almost all of it is just stuff that doesn't need to happen. It's to get it to 74 minutes.
I had a thought that was like, if you cut out everything unnecessary, how long would it actually be? And then I realized the answer is 0 minutes.
Exactly, yeah, zero. I wanted to preface our explanation and discussion of the movie with that because I feel like it's easy to just say, well, this is the worst movie ever. And just, it doesn't really mean much.
Not anymore.
But as someone who's seen hundreds, if not thousands of movies myself, I can genuinely say this is the worst. And that doesn't count, you know, stuff like we talked about, like with student films and side projects that never got like a release or anything. Stuff that's not really a movie in that same way. It just in terms of major releases, this is just the worst.
Yeah.
I think it makes The Room look like Citizen Kane. It's just unbelievably bad in every possible way. In every scene, there's a problem. So Joe and I went through this movie scene by scene to capture all of that.
And we each have about eight full pages of notes. Mine's 3,400 words because there's so much wrong with this stupid movie.
I think mine's 12 pages.
Oh my god. How many words do you have?
Well, mine's handwritten. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
We'll give you some time to count the words.
Yeah, we'll be back in a half hour or so.
30 minutes later.
Also, one of the reasons I cataloged my notes on this to such an extent is because it's also not a very remarkable movie either.
No.
It doesn't stay very long in your brain. The first time that we watched it together, Joe and I, Joe had completely forgotten about it.
That I had even seen it by the next day. I was like, oh, I've got to see that movie still. And then I think Lars was like, we already saw it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah, I find when I'm reviewing movies for my podcast, because I watch it ahead of time and I take all the notes, I usually split it into a couple days of watching because there's such a high frequency of failure. I kind of want to spread it out. And, like, I tried to do that with this movie where, like, I watched the first half hour and I, like, stepped away and came back the second half of the day. And I had to, like, completely restart it because I'm like,
yeah,
it left no impression on you. It just washes over you and you're like, this is horrible. And then it passes.
Yeah.
It's not even that you dislike it. It's just like, okay, I guess that just happened. Like, all right, I guess the scene's over.
So let's actually talk about the scenes. We're going to break it down scene by scene, and it's not a long movie, so don't worry. But I want to talk about what's wrong in every single scene of this movie. And it starts with the studio credits at the beginning. This is apparently made by a production team called Suicidal Productions, which is lovely. And it begins with very, very unpleasant splattering noises and screaming, which I guess is on point for a horror movie, but it's just so gross.
Yeah.
Like, even the studio bumper is just gross. By the way, I'm not going to be bothering with any sort of big spoiler warning here. It's not the kind of movie that you need to worry about spoiling at all.
I mean, can it be spoiled?
Well, nothing happens in it. Spoilers usually involve something happening, and since nothing happens...
Right, it requires a plot, and, well, more so, it requires twists, it requires resolution to things.
It requires, like, anything.
It requires uncertainty.
I mean, if you told me, like, word for word what happens in the quote-unquote climax of the film, I'd be watching the entire movie up to that point going, I keep waiting to the point where, like, that climax is going to make sense within the context of this movie.
Nope.
Never does.
So, the movie starts in a graveyard where a nun is walking through it, and an unseen radio explains that a nun, presumably this one, has tortured or killed 14 little girls. My first question with this is why she still has on her nun habit if she's wanted for serial murders.
Yeah.
This is the first of many mistakes. And yet, it doesn't seem to matter, because she is never punished for this whatsoever. She commits all of her murders in broad daylight, right by the street, and just gets away with it. I don't understand it at all.
Maybe the nun is not actually existing in real life, and it's from, like, a different... Like, it could, like, move in and out of this dimension, or it's, like, you know, a demon, so it's not worried about getting caught.
Yeah, I mean, but technically, the nun could actually be a chicken, and we're just seeing it like like she's a nun. Like, we can make up things to help better explain the movie, but it does a poor job of explaining it itself.
She stabs the girl once... Right out in the open, yep. And she's instantly soaked in blood.
She stabs the girl in the stomach, and the girl is soaked in blood from the neck down immediately.
Mm-hmm. Once again, noting that this is in broad daylight, she does not clean up any fingerprints. There's blood everywhere, so it's very clear what's happening. If you look in the back of the scene at the time, this is a high traffic area. There's lots of cars driving by.
And you can hear them just whizzing by every scene. Yeah.
In a way... More happens in the first 2 minutes of the movie than will happen in the rest of the movie combined, essentially.
And it's not much.
Yeah. The first 2 minutes holds more narratively tight and consistent storytelling and cause and effect.
What happens next is that she dumps the body in the water, and it's quite clear that it's a blow-up doll when you see the person floating dead. I mean, there's no attempt to hide that. And then we get to see the shark that she summons from Lord Satan, who does not exist in the film in any sort of integrated way. It's just a 3D render that plays once in a while.
And it's the same one.
It is the same over and over. Over and over and over again.
As soon as she said Lord Satan, my gut reaction was like, that's not right, nun. Satan is bad. You're a nun.
Why would a nun...
It's the opposite.
...be calling out to Satan? First of all, why would a nun be calling out to Satan? Second of all, why would a nun call him Lord Satan? And third of all, why is she asking for a shark?
Does she specifically ask for a shark, or does she just, like, ask for a monster?
Well, I don't know.
Because she just pushes a girl in the ocean and is like, send me a creature. And he's like, shark.
It's still weird. Whether it was a shark or just a creature, it's a strange request.
It's inconsequential. She could have asked for a shark. She could have asked for, like, a dinosaur. She could have asked for, like, you know, bubonic plague. It doesn't change anything. It could have been a clip of, like, Captain Crunch on the screen.
It could have been a clip of Joe naked, and it wouldn't matter. Like, it's still...
Right.
And that's the end of the scene. That's just it. This isn't plot. Things just happen. So now we go into the credits, and I think Joe took some pretty detailed notes on the credits.
Well, there are names that appear on the screen. The actors' names fade on and off the screen using what I would say is some really good word art technology and PowerPoint transitions. Like, did a ninth grader do the editing for this movie?
You're implying that there was editing.
Okay, literally the thought that occurred to me when I heard the theme song is it sounds like someone was playing all of the demo modes on a keyboard at, like, a Toys R Us at the same time.
That's not a bad way to describe
it. I'm going to play the, like, royalty-free version of the Jaws theme song, but also then, like, the generic horror noises, but then also, like, the screaming noises, but then also, like, the spooky howling noises all at once, and also there's just kind of a kid slamming all 10 fingers on the keyboard at the same time.
The music is unusually bad. Just really bad.
Like, actively bad.
Yeah, and there's just kind of a continuous shot of the sea for a while, and then some jellyfish, and then smaller sharks that are no threat to humans at all. This is just all stock footage that they use for the intro. The sea is the only thing that's related to it, but I think it's like the sea. I don't think it's the lake in question. So none of this.
I was gonna say it's not even the sea because it all takes place in a lake.
Yeah, the shark is in a lake for this entire movie, which is. It's hopelessly bizarre.
Only addressed once.
Yeah.
And then not really addressed as it's addressed.
So then, 1 year later, we're introduced to three women driving in a car with no air conditioning. Their names are given very conspicuously, you know, as exposition, so you get to know their names, but you've already forgotten them. Unless you write them down, you will not remember their names.
And also, they switched their names.
They switched the names?
They did?
They do.
Mm-hmm. I did not notice.
It's, like, subtle, but, like, Lauren becomes Lisa at some point.
Lauren?
Like, it's another L name.
Yeah, I heard Lauren.
Yeah.
Okay.
At some point.
So I've decided to refer to them mostly as their hair colors.
And I do that, too.
Yeah. There's the brunette girl, there's a blonde girl, and then there's another blonde girl who, for later reasons, I've just chosen to call Fangs.
That's Allie, right?
No, it's not. It's the other one. Wait, yes, it is. I don't remember. Okay, so Allie is the one who's like with the fangs, right?
Allie's the one who has the fangs, I think.
I think. So each of them, I think, with maybe the exception of the brunette, is a complete basic bitch in every possible way. It's just the most offensive portrayal of a dumb woman, just like aggressively stupid. And the brunette, I found, is the only one who has like a shred of agreeability at all.
Yeah, like the blonde, she's basically complaining that it's not a water park and that it's just a normal lake. So she's like, she wants a water slide or a wave pool at least. And they're like, it's just a lake. And she's like, what can you do at a lake? And then the brunette girl is like, just normal lake stuff, which is my favorite line of dialogue in that whole scene. Just normal lake stuff.
That's kind of brilliantly sarcastic, like, you know, you do lake stuff at the lake. Like, just, like, obviously everyone knows that you go, like, tan or you go swim or you just hang out.
Like, I have to wonder, did they give them a script or just, like, general bullet points to improvise their way through?
This character should presumably know, since they have to go on a trip to the lake, that they're going to a lake. Like, she wouldn't still think that it's a large water park. There's no reason for that.
She's on the way over. Yeah, like
this is just to establish her as being really bitchy as a person, which is for no reason. There's no reason for her to be a jerk. She just is. There's no motivations for any of this. This movie is fucking stupid. I fucking hate this movie. Oh my god.
I think the only justification for making her bitchy is like, oh, well, when the shark exorcism happens, you're like, well, it happened to the bitchy one.
Yeah. Do you think that was even what they were going for? Or is that just kind of when it ended up happening? I don't know. Whatever.
I mean, later on, they criticize her about like, well, you're trying to steal so-and-so's boyfriend. She's like, I do what I want. So it's like, aha, well, narratively, she deserves to be shark possessed because she's bad.
Yeah, but the whole time it's just like, who the fuck cares what anything, what's going on? Like,
so basically what ends up happening is Fangs separates from them because she needs to make a call, I guess, and whatever. The two girls go out and tan, they go on their phones and they just bitch at each other. And then Fangs swims out to the middle of the lake, stands there, then begins to swim back.
And she goes swimming without telling anybody.
And there are about a dozen no swimming signs around this lake.
And she just kind of goes and does it. It's like someone says, oh, go swim in the lake. And so she kind of swims out to the middle and then sits there and then comes back. Like, it's kind of weird. She's like a cat where what she's doing, there's not really much reason for it. She's just doing it to do it. And then comes the shark.
So she gets attacked by a robotic shark. And
wait,
for some reason, she's now, well, it looks like a robot. It looks like
CGI shark.
Okay.
So now for some reason, she's covered in ketchup and, the ketchup's on her leg and she has barbecue sauce running down her chin. Why does she have barbecue sauce and ketchup? I don't know. And she also has no scratches at all, despite all the hilariously fake blood.
Because she's a snack.
Yeah, it's just, she just has fluids all over her. There's no...
There's just blood on an unblemished leg.
Yeah, it's stated later that she got a severe bite from the shark, which doesn't happen at all.
It's not reflected in the reality of the filmmaking.
By the way, I want to catalog every single piece of bullshit in this movie, so I want to retreat just 1 second back to the moment where the blonde and the brunette pop up in alarm once they notice that Fangs is struggling. What's weird here is that they both pop up. They're like, what's going on? And then the blonde says, wait, I'm confused. She has like no reason to be surprised. And yet she pops up anyway. So it's like a weird thing where she's like popping up in surprise, but then says, wait, I don't have any reason to be surprised. It's just...
And then the scene comes to an abrupt end, and now they're in a real hospital.
Right, which I agree with. I think that what ended up happening is they got cell phone cam footage from a random hospital, like, discreetly to film this. Because there's no way that they had the budget for that.
No.
To replicate a hospital with workers who are, like, you know, actually... And it's too realistic for that.
No, I thought it was stock footage, and then I'm like, oh no, it's too gross looking.
Yeah, it's not like
stock
nice
footage.
Stock footage of a hospital. It's just like, it looks like someone like discreetly like, oh, let me get this real quick before they notice. Anyway, so several days later, we find the blonde girl idly playing games by herself at Dave and Buster's for some reason. She seems drawn to the sharks and the water stuff. I don't know why. Why is she here?
And the other thing is it's obviously so painfully loud inside the Dave and Buster's. It's completely quiet. It's silent. And it's just like post-recorded, like, silent footsteps through a hallway as she walks through a crowded
arcade.
Yeah,
the sound design in this movie is just awful.
And then in the next scene, it's so loud, they're, like, yelling over each other.
Yeah, and
heard.
They don't have any lapel mics on for this scene either. So it's like there's a ton of random bug buzz in the background. So it's like it's difficult to hear them.
It seems like the director just randomly said, like, now do anything. And so they went to the arcade because they leave the arcade and there's no reason for them to be there.
Right. Yeah. They could have done this scene without the arcade. It's just I think it was there because there's some vague shark imagery like in the arcade.
The director went to the Dave and Buster's and said, I am doing a movie on sharks. Here's a shark. Boom, bang, bing, I got myself a scene.
Or maybe they were just at Dave and Buster's, like, for dinner before they finished filming, and they're just like, well, let's just include this.
said, wait, we don't have our lapel mics.
And then he's like, just go with it. Just go with it.
We're not going to use any audio anyway. Yeah. We're going to replace it with footsteps.
Did you guys see the version of the movie with the mid-credit scene and the post-credit scene?
Yep, we did.
Okay, making sure.
Yeah, there are multiple scenes after the credits start rolling, which I guess they took inspiration from the Marvel series for, okay, that's fine.
They were ready for the Shark Exorcist universe. It was happening.
It was.
It really is a universe.
Well,
because they started about 16 plot lines and not one of them wrapped. Nope.
So what ends up happening here is apparently Fangs was apparently miraculously healed, and considering her injuries included small ketchup stains, I don't think that that's that much of a miracle, but she does get healed. And the blonde girl is completely uninterested in the healing of one of her best friends. She's just actively being like, whatever, I don't care. I don't get it.
She was mad at her for something.
But what? Is there like a scene that was cut that was like...
No, she says she's sleeping with the other girl's boyfriend.
But why does that mean that she doesn't care? What? She should still be like, oh, I'm concerned about this person's well-being. Anyway, then we're treated to one of Joe's favorite segments in the movie called Ghost Whackers.
Oh, Ghost Fuckers.
Yep, that's Joe's nickname for it, is Ghost Fuckers.
I call it Ghost Fuckers because let's be honest, that's what it is. Yep.
And, okay, so aside from the horrible soundtrack at this point, I didn't think there was anything wrong with this scene at first. Like, it was just kind of a pastiche of...
What?
Of dime a dozen, you know, like, ghost hunter shows. Like, it was fine at first, but then...
But something happens that makes it amazing.
But then it's... Okay, so, for context, they're presenting it as if she's recording this out at the lake with someone with a handycam who's, like, getting the footage. But then it shows that she's turned towards the guy with the camera who is in the shot, and then she turns around.
And there's a camera behind her to the camera that she's filming.
Do you think
it?
The director got that, or do you think that was an error?
It's an error either way, though.
Well, but was it intentional?
No, but there's shots where, like, she's walking down the pier, and the camera guy's right up in her face, and she's addressing a camera that, like, is off the pier on the ground, which is the camera we're watching
through. It makes no sense either way, by the way, because, first, if this is implied to be only, you know, a single camera show with the guy with the handycam, then the scene makes no sense, because she turns away from that guy. But if this is implied to be a multi-camera setup, then why is the shot set in a certain way that they show the guy with the handycam in it? It's incomprehensible in both ways.
I mean, like, on those ghost hunter shows, they'll sometimes, like, show the cameraman showing the cameraman, because it's like, the five of us are going to run through this house, and there's a cameraman following each of us, so when they, like, converge upon the same spot, it's like, aha, you see my cameraman, and I see yours. Like, were they trying to imply they had a whole team at the lake? Like, for all the multiple shots they were getting, and it's like, oh, this is just one of our cameramen in the shot.
I don't think
so.
They never mention any other cameraman, and it's painted to be like he's the only one.
Well, she has a show, and it's called I Can't Keep My Hair Out of My Face as I Stare Into the
Wind.
It's
called Ghost Fuckers.
Yeah, but, like, did she not have, like, did she not think to bring a scrunchie to a windy day or a lapel mic or...
Literally, during all of her scenes, I'm like, put your hair back. Get your hair to your face. Yeah. Get your hair... Like, I couldn't concentrate on what she was saying. It was so irritating.
Nobody knew it was going to be windy that day.
I imagine as a woman, that's frustrating to watch.
It's just...
At one point, to quote her, she says, "Spirit of the water, speak to me now. I must know the truth. Give me the truth. How did these women die?" And then she says something kind of weird, which is, "Tell me, I need to know, is there something evil beneath these waves? Or is there something far more sinister?" So it's like, which is it? Is it evil or is it sinister?
Yeah, it's just like bizarre. It's like, well, just evil or much more sinister than evil.
Is it delicious or tasty?
Right.
Synonyms,
how do they work? Is it sharp or is it just pointy?
And then she starts to convulse, and honestly what she ends up doing is just faking, or she's just acting out a seizure.
Or an orgasm.
I felt like it was almost insulting to people with epilepsy.
And I literally had that thought when I'm watching, like, Grey's Anatomy. Like, is there a special class of, like, here's how to fake a seizure for, like, a network quality show or, like, movie. Like, you don't just innately know how to fake a seizure.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe people are just naturally good at faking seizures, and they're clearly not.
Yeah.
And then in tongues, speaking in tongues, she says, I will eat your flesh and swallow your souls.
Who is she saying this
to?
Who
is she talking to?
Yeah. And she's like grunting like a dog in between. It's a very, very strange thing. It's, why does she want this? Like,
and then this,
she's a ghost fucker.
She wants to fuck the ghost. And then the scene randomly ends.
Yeah. Also, why did the cameraman not help her?
He zooms in on her face uncomfortably tightly, like up to the point where he physically touches her face. And then the scene ends.
3 weeks later, Fangs and Brunette are having a conversation. And the brunette says, there was this chunk bitten out of your leg. No, there wasn't. There's no miracle. There just wasn't any initial damage. So that's not true. And so they got lapel mics for this scene finally, but the weird thing is that they use them for that like far shot where they're not actually close to the camera. And as they get closer to the camera, it doesn't become any louder. No. So it's just, I don't understand what the point of that shot was. It doesn't make sense with the sound design at all.
And it includes my favorite line of the movie, which is, that's the thing about dying. It is a real buzzkill.
Which, who's this dialogue for?
I don't know, and nobody they're talking about mm-hmm. is dead.
And like, okay.
That's the
okay.
thing about dying.
Like, you were bitten by a shark. You've been a real buzzkill. She's like, that's the thing about dying. It's a real buzzkill. You didn't die.
So, okay, but let's assume that, like, the bite was implied and they didn't have the makeup budget for it. So let's just assume it's, like, a part of her that we didn't see. Like, a part of the leg that just wasn't in the shot. So I feel like the skepticism that the brunette shows here is totally warranted. She's saying, like, there's not even a scar or anything. But it's kind of brushed off, like, it's fine. It's just a miracle. So either way, it's just incomprehensibly stupid. And then we get the hitchhiking scene, which...
I thought it was an entirely new girl.
Is it?
It's...
I didn't realize it was Fangs.
Believe it or not.
Because her hair grows a foot between shots.
Mm-hmm.
Her hair is shoulder length when she's talking to the brunette, and when she's hitchhiking, she's in a similar but different outfit, and her hair is a foot longer.
So they waited like a year to film it.
Yeah, I think this is not filmed all at once.
No, she put in extensions! Those white, blonde, natural hair. No, she clipped in her extensions.
Yeah, we're trying to make sense of it here. I don't think we're going to be able to. Also, she's trying to hitchhike on an empty street. Like, she keeps pointing out her thumb to no one in particular. Which you don't do. You do that when there are cars. You don't just, like, randomly point your thumb at nothing. That's not how this works.
Unless somebody's gonna be driving by and she doesn't see them and she's like, I want to be prepared.
But it's a completely empty street. Like, it's obvious that there's not a person in sight.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess maybe that was more of a problem for me than it was for you, Joe. But...
And the guy picks her up and originally doesn't want to take her to the lake because she's saying she wants to go to the lake and he says it's where people got killed and she advises him she's going with him or without him, so he agrees to take her enthusiastically, probably because he just wants to spend time with her.
By the way, this is like the most Jersey Shore fuckboy style guy like imaginable. Like every cliche in the book.
Tribal tattoos.
Yep.
The second she sits down, his hand is halfway up her skirt. Like,
and it's a short skirt.
He immediately tries to finger her. Like, not just touch, but, like, go all the way in. And both of their reactions to this baffle me. Because, first of all, she's annoyed, but not really to the extent that a sexual assault attempt would warrant. Like, she's just like, don't do that. And he just, like, assaulted her.
But then, in the very next moment, she apparently had liked it, because now they're in the lake making out.
Yeah, and they're lightly splashing each other and doing this weird, like, mating ritual dance thing.
And is someone banging off screen? Because there's, like, groaning and, there's moaning and grunting that's not coming out of them.
Oh, so they added that in post to try to make it more sexy? That's ridiculous.
Well, like, did they put that like in post to try to make it sound like a sexier makeout, or is someone just like fucking off screen on the shore? Like, what is this? Because I watched the movie with headphones on.
Oh yeah, I think the ADR is so atrocious weird. In this movie. It's just we'll talk more about that later. So the same footage of the CGI shark shows up again. Is she supposed to be the shark in this situation? Like, I don't get it.
Who knows?
Well, he gets... All right, so he basically, like, a brief rundown. There's a shark that is showing up, the same shark, and he gets pulled into the water as if being pulled down, but then they show the shark again, and he didn't pull him down. He's still just swimming. So he's struggling and getting pulled into the water for no reason, because the shark didn't actually attack him.
There must have been another shark.
Yeah, or something like that. And then the shark swims away, and that's it.
No, it was the nun with the snorkel.
Oh, and now
down.
The shark is red, by the way.
Yeah, red shark.
With yellow eyes.
I think
eyes.
What happened here is that he may have had someone do a render for him of the shark, or he may have downloaded a render, and it was like, it wasn't like a pack of them, so he had to like find another render of a shark, and he just compromised like, oh, well, this one's red, but it's free. So like, I'll just use that for the other scene or something. That's the only reason I can imagine why they would change the color of the shark.
So I guess the guy in the hitchhiking guy is Bobby, right? Bobby is the guy who dies, and then
yeah,
the actor who plays Bobby, who is now a priest, is reading a letter about the death of his brother, apparently, who is actually him, with very traditional language, like our love and prayers are with
you. That's what that was?
Yeah, what a slap together explanation for that, by the way. Like,
fully didn't track like, that.
Oh, it was his brother, Bobby.
Your brother died. That's why we get to reuse you.
And this is the only time they use the father's name, Michael. They never use that again.
Also, why did they say your brother? Like, he would know it's his brother. No one would actually ever write that. The only reason they do that is because it sets up the explanation for why they reuse the actor.
Because it's his brother.
Yeah. So that's just complete bullshit. And he's sad about this, but not like your brother just died sad. Like, he's just kind of like, oh.
Not devastated.
Which, like, even if you dislike your brother, like, you wouldn't you would be, like, distraught if they died suddenly at a young age. I mean, so it's not realistic at all. And then, oh, Joe, can you explain the next scene?
Oh, I'd love to.
Okay. Wait, let me give you a challenge. Can you do it in less than 10 words?
I'll just do it in, like, a couple seconds.
Sure.
Girls talking to Allie. Goes to her room and doesn't find her. Why is she in her house? And then she gets into the bed and the scene ends.
That's the scene. She tries to find Fangs and can't.
And then she gets into her bed for some reason.
No point to that scene at all. Like, it doesn't affect the rest of the movie at all. And now we're back to Ghost Whackers.
Ghost fuckers. All right, so now back to ghost fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to channel a demonic force. And by the way, she's still facing backwards.
Yeah.
And then another girl interrupts her on her own goddamn show to do her bullshit. And she's basically saying...
Ghost fakers.
Yeah, ghost fakers. And she's saying how it's bullshit. And like, then the girl says, anyway, back to me. I am a serious psychic investigator. But the wind is too loud to hear her.
Yep.
So you can hear the other girl better. And like, they're still recording. And this whole time, I'm like, if that were my show, I would be like, all right, cut recording. Like, what are you doing here? And then you start recording when you're ready. Not like, don't keep rolling. Well, none of this, like, is going to be usable footage for her.
So when I saw this scene, when I was rewatching this movie this week, I pressed pause. I went to Amazon.com and I looked something up, and it turns out that for $2.50, anyone can purchase an object called a windscreen. A windscreen protects the microphone from wind noises, such as the problems that were encountered in this scene. So either the budget for Shark Exorcist could not accommodate this.
You think they had a $2.50 budget?
Or they were just extremely lazy and just didn't care. So I'm going to ask you guys for a vote here. Which one do you think it was?
Didn't care.
Joe?
Didn't know. I'm going to say they didn't know about this problem, and they didn't listen to the audio until after everything was done.
I'm with Chelsea on this one. I don't think they cared. But yeah, I can see incompetence is also playing a part in this. Do you think Donald Farmer knows what a windscreen is? It's possible, but it was not used for this movie.
I mean, I'm using one, and I barely know how to do a podcast.
Yeah, it even comes with like a lot of mics. Like it's just something that you have. So since Joe did the last quick scene, I'll go ahead and do the next one. Back to the church, the priest steps aside of the church. He goes on his phone, and that's it. That's the entire scene.
That's it. He looks at pictures of gargoyles and demons on his phone, and then like the scene ends. Like you do when you're a father in a church. Mm.
All right, in the next scene, Chelsea, can you try to make some sense of this next scene?
Okay, I'm going to try. So there are three girls in a graveyard. Two of them are white. One of them is black. Only one of them is wearing white. And the girl in white is possessed? Because her eyes are rolling back in her head and she's freaking out similarly to the way the ghost fuckers girl was.
Yeah. Ghost
and the black girl has giant feather hoop earrings in her ears and is talking with an attempt at an accent. So I don't know if she's trying to be like witch doctor or what.
Question: Who are these people?
I don't know, but you can see up you can see up the skirt of the one that's making the high pitched noises and doing the zombie thing. She's like moaning and screaming lightly, and then you can see
all
up
three
her skirt.
Of them start having a seizure.
Yeah,
and then the girl in white starts bleeding from the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everyone's just like spazzing out and like having a seizure and bleeding,
having
their
freak attacks.
And the ones who aren't helping the people who are.
So the girl who's screaming while arching her back, she's actually appearing to have tightness of the chest and difficulty breathing, which could indicate heart problems for her. This is the girl in the black dress.
Wait, so you think that she should go to the doctor?
I think she's having heart problems, yeah.
Okay.
And that's what it... And then a girl accuses her of faking it, and that she's not actually doing, like, a zombie thing, and then the blood. And then that's when the blood is dripping from their eyes, and also the second girl is opening her eyes suddenly, and that's when the scene ends.
You'd think when the girl's eyes start to bleed that they might get concerned.
Well, yeah, I mean, that seems like more of a problem than the potential heart issues, actually.
But it's not addressed at all. Also, it's never multiple reasons shown who to these go to people the are, ever.
And this is the halfway mark of the movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
The end of this scene, I'm like, okay, there's no possible way they can resolve all of these plot lines in the next
and here's the thing, around. They don't even try
and
to.
They don't even attempt to. They start new plots.
Yep. This is only about a half an hour in. And it felt like days at this point. It seems so long when you're watching it, even though it's extremely short, just because you don't want to.
Yeah, I watched 40 minutes of it, and I was like, it's got to be over soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going for like an hour.
So, Chelsea, can you catch us up on the priest real quick? It won't take long.
I mean, literally, my only notes are, it cuts back to the priest. I seriously don't understand how this movie's going to resolve. That's the end of the scene. It cuts back to him, and he's looking at a camera. Maybe he's feeling something. Maybe he's thinking something. No way of knowing.
The father is he's looking at his phone, and then he does a cross on his chest, and then he exits to the left, and the scene ends.
Yeah, they could have just combined that with the previous priest scene, which was also short.
They could have had a moderate scene, yeah.
Phone. Either of them, because it's implied that he leaves to go investigate.
Yeah, why did they
there
need him on his phone?
There could have been a scene in the middle of those two scenes that explained why he was doing either the things he was doing or how he was in any way a part of the scene that happened in the middle. Ooh. If he was there,
yeah, like, what
if
does he
knew
have
about
to do with
it,
anything?
If he knew any of the people there, if they had anything to do with the story that's going on with the shark.
And this next scene is a real delight.
The next scene
destroyed
my soul. And I imagine that a lot of people tap out at this scene just because it's so incomprehensible.
Not me. This is when it really piqued my interest.
Well, this scene is just so weird.
Quite bizarre. This is when the whole movie really starts to take on like a really creepy, bizarre, like, why? What?
And not in a good way.
Mentally handicapped lesbians do it for you?
Well, here's how it goes.
Well,
okay,
not exactly.
So there's this early 40s woman, I would estimate.
Generously.
Giggling around on a on a merry-go-round.
Early 40s?
I would guess. She appears to be that age.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
However, she clearly has an ambiguous disorder of some sort. Like, her mental age is quite young. She's just giggling like a child. She has a pair of toy sharks for some reason.
A big shark and a small shark.
Mm-hmm. She gets up to go on the slide. And then, instead of going down the slide, she kind of, like, stamps her feet down it very awkwardly and kind of aggressively at the end.
I actually did not see that coming. She hops over the one bar, and then she hops over the other bar. And yep. as she goes to slide down the slide, she just runs down it. It actually made me laugh out loud.
Chelsea, do you know what NARM is?
I do not.
Let me send you a video real quick. It's like 20 seconds. This is what we mean when we say that something is NARM. It's a moment that plays like this, where it's funny, but not in the way that the scene intends it to be.
What the hell?
Yeah, when we call scene NARMy, what we mean is, like, it's really funny, but not in the way that it's, like, it's not funny because that's what they were going for. Like, it's funny just because it's, like, in this case, it's funny because he's trying to be dramatic, but he keeps going, NARM, NARM, NARM.
It's like a really sad discount version of Hodor.
Yeah. Oh, now I'm sad. But, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Oh.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So this scene for me was really NARMy because they were trying to make her out to be a simpleton, but really it's just funny because she's, like, really misusing a slide. Like, I never expected to see that. And then Fang shows up.
She's also barefoot.
Oh, yeah, she's barefoot for some reason.
If there was going to be any symbolism of this character, which there is not, I think it just represents danger because she's running to the slide barefoot, which is dangerous. And before that, she's also doing dangerous stuff when she's on the merry-go-round and her head is hanging off and she can hit it on something. And that's dangerous.
And she's using the slide irresponsibly.
And then she runs down the slide. And but there's no symbolism because that would actually require effort and talent on the director's part.
I have a partial theory that this was a misguided attempt to be quote-unquote inclusive in the movie by including someone who is clearly mentally challenged in some way. But, I mean, I don't know.
I don't think this movie was trying to respect or include anybody.
Unless it's washed-up porn actresses with blonde hair.
There are plenty of those. So Fang shows up and tries to pick her up.
Fang also has braces, which I feel like is not addressed.
Yeah.
She has those horrible clear bracket braces that are trying to pretend like they're not braces.
Yeah. And Fangs is trying to pick this lady up.
Which I picked up immediately, but Lars actually watched it the second time and got that from it.
Yeah, I don't think I was completely sober the first time I saw it, but I did pick up on it this time, for sure.
I wasn't completely sober either of the times I saw it. But
I mean, the third sentence she says to her is, "Do you like to get wet?" I mean,
she says, "I like to get wet." And then this lady, since she's mentally challenged, of course, takes that very literally. It's a very innocent mistake on her part and takes her to the pool.
She leads her to the pool, holding her eyes closed, yep. but Allie's in the front. So Allie's really leading from this girl's behind her. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's like a slight oversight or what, but
that's a good tagline for the movie. I don't know if that was a slight oversight or what.
Then they're at a pool because Allie said she likes to get wet. And that's when the sexy music starts playing as Allie looks like she's going to get undressed. And then she starts dancing a little. So she takes her shoes off and then her shirt and then her shorts. And she's actually wearing a bathing suit, which everybody's wearing a bathing suit underneath their clothes in this movie.
Everyone.
Conveniently, because they're going to the pool, and then she slowly gets into the pool and swims around, and then ominous sounds play over the sexy music. Is there going to be a shark? Probably, is what I wrote.
And you know how you know that this is a washed-up porn star? Is because at one point when she's climbing up the ladder, she forgets that she's in a regular movie, and she does a sexy look towards the camera. Did you guys catch that?
She does that a lot. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she does that several times.
Yeah, she has completely forgotten at that point that she's not recording the plot.
Gonzo point of view.
She's traditionally trained, Lars. She can't easily forget. Yep.
That's a kind of tradition, I guess.
So she looks the mentally challenged girl up and down, and then she says, okay, I can take a hint. Then the mentally challenged girl gets undressed too to reveal a swimsuit, because everybody's wearing a swimsuit under their clothes at all times. So then Allie starts touching the girl's shoulders, and so she says, what are you doing? Like, what did you think was happening? Like, and then she says, you're freaky, but it doesn't matter, because then Allie wakes up and it was a dream.
Oh yeah, that entire scene was a dream.
Surprise!
Surprise, motherfucker!
Including the parts before Fangs shows up. Like, that was also part of it.
She dreams of mentally challenged lesbians, I told
you.
The
one girl is a lesbian, Allie, or at least bi, but the mentally challenged girl did nothing to imply that she's attracted to women, besides...
True.
Well, she did seem kind of out of her element at the end and like, oh, you're freaky, but she also stayed, implying that, like, it's possible that she was, like, closeted or something, but...
Maybe, but she didn't know what was going on either.
Also, it's wildly inappropriate to pick up someone who's mentally challenged and may not be able to consent and just...
That brings up issues for another episode. Like, are mentally challenged people able to consent?
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends.
If they understand what's going on.
Yeah, but this is someone who is so mentally challenged that they don't know how to use a slide. So,
or she just didn't want to use a slide the right way. Like, but she's mentally challenged for other reasons though, because she's like laughing maniacally.
Mm-hmm.
And Allie is clearly
hitting
on
her. She has her toys with her and everything, and yeah.
Yeah. So.
It's kind of an offensive portrayal of someone who's mentally challenged, by the way. Like,
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the things that they're... Anyway, let's move
anyway,
on.
So Ghostwhackers. Next scene, we're back to ghost fuckers.
And yet another sign saying, don't swim in this fucking lake.
Uh-huh.
There are about 20 of these signs.
This scene is the most awkwardly sexual one in the entire movie. The undertones of sex here are disgusting. Like, it's like...
I mean...
Joe, you can go ahead and quote her.
So, essentially what happens is the redhead here is calling upon the spirit of the water again, the malevolent presence from hell. She's going to have another one of her freak attacks, I bet. These are my notes. She's talking to the water, asking it to show itself. Then she suddenly does have another one of her freak attacks with moaning and orgasm sounds this time. Make no mistake about it. She tells the spirit to come inside her. She says, and I quote, oh, yes, spirit, come in me. Oh, yes. Oh, infect me. Then her eyes roll back and she collapsed because I guess she came.
So that was a scene that actually happened in the movie. I just want to reiterate that's a part of this movie. The cameraman proceeds to bail, like you do, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the scene.
I bet what happened was the director said, now just say anything, and she too turned to her classical conditioning.
Ah!
Her traditionally trained self.
Yeah. So, the next scene is Fangs and some random lady. Did you guys figure out who that was? Is she just a random lady, or
she is just a girl that wants to expose her for the bitch that she is. That's what she says in the next scene. I'm going to expose her for the bitch she is.
Wait, no, that's
no, not that girl. Different girl.
No, there's that random lake scene that happens right after.
Maybe I missed it.
Yeah, Fangs and this random lady start dancing around in the water.
Oh yeah, you're right. So Allie is getting into the lake. And there's another girl there already. Not sure. I wasn't sure if it was the mentally challenged girl again or not. She's clearly trying to seduce this girl by dancing around her in the water, bouncing up and down. The same shark clip plays, and the girls are pulled under the water, which is a shame. Now at least one of the girls has ketchup on them, and then the scene ends.
The problem with this scene in particular is that if they're trying to show us that random lady was any character that we already know... Her face was completely hidden with her hair.
So the answer is, I don't know.
Exactly.
She could be anyone.
Yeah, it could have been the priest. I don't know.
Could have been the fucking Pope.
Yep. It could have been, because it's completely unclear.
Yeah.
Then the library scene happens, where apparently this movie switches into a zombie flick for 5 minutes.
Oh, was that supposed to be a library?
Or something.
I called it the Capitol Building.
Yeah, something like that. So the ghost fakers lady confronts ghost fucker.
Oh, the ghost fucker's faker.
Yeah. And then, so like that host lady is skulking around like a zombie for some reason. Like, clearly that's what the actor is going for there. And the skeptic girl tries to confront her and she barfs on her. That's the end of the scene.
Because Exorcist.
Just barf. That's it.
Yeah.
We move on.
She sneaks up from behind her. The ghost fuckers girl's in a stupor from being fucked too hard from spirits. She manages to quickly turn around and lean in for a kiss or something, and instead she gets thrown up on her face. Brianna is screaming, so the joke's on Brianna for trying to expose her for being a bitch. But it's kind of a bitchy thing to lean in for a kiss and then throw up on someone.
It's also kind of weird that she's there doing what she's doing. Like, I feel like the appropriate response to try to expose someone as a fraud is to present the evidence of that to the public. You don't approach them at the library / Capitol building / whatever it is while they're clearly in a zombified state and just, like, get mad. Like, there's no reason for her to be there at all. No. A lot of these characters are doing things that they have no reason to be doing at all.
So then on the next scene, it's one of the probably one of the weirdest, most macabre scenes of the movie, and it's also one of the scenes that's the longest scene unnecessarily.
Yep.
In the whole movie. So do you want to talk about it?
It's the scene where I'm like, so the movie does know it's a joke.
What?
Because it's the jogger guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so this guy just jogs all over the lake. It's like 2 minutes of shots of like...
At least 2 minutes.
Yeah, it does. Down the pier, yeah, it conveys in several minutes what could have been conveyed in a few seconds, which is that this...
In 10 seconds.
This guy's jogging.
And he comes upon the girl that was attacked in the previous lake scene.
Well, let me draw attention to something first real quick. There is one other thing that happens in this scene at one point where he jogs by an older guy. And then the older guy just starts kind of chuckling.
Yep.
And I'm not sure what was meant by that. Was he laughing because the guy was pretty fat? Or was he laughing because it was amusing to see someone jogging? Like, what?
He might have been laughing because this guy's an idiot because the floors are wet. And that's maybe why he was laughing. Or he knew that there's something going on with the shark.
I'm kind of wondering if he was just like someone who happened to be in the shot and he wasn't an actor. So he's just there's
that's
like,
entirely possible.
Like, you just want to be in the movie?
That's probably what happened.
Yeah.
They were like, we need you to go inside. We're filming. No, I'm not going inside. All right. Do you want to be in a movie?
Yeah. The part of the scene that follows, I think, is the worst scene in the movie.
Yeah, because he comes across the girl from the previous scene and she's like face down in the water with ketchup on her.
Yep.
And he's like, oh my God, she's dead. He throws up. He just straight down himself, like actively tries to vomit down his own front.
Yeah, he holds his head up so that he can puke more on himself.
And then the worst line in the movie.
Yep.
She's still kind of hot. I still do her.
A dead girl?
Who is this line for?
Clearly,
who
the audience
possibly benefit from this.
I think it's the audience that is now saying to themselves, like, "Oh, this is a hot actress." So he's like, "Let's be relatable. She's still kind of hot. I'd still do her because that's what the audience is thinking."
Necrophilia, though.
But the audience is aware that she's not really dead. To the audience, she's just an actress. So he's relating to the audience, I think.
That's absurd. That's ridiculous.
That she's not really dead.
If that's what they were going for, that was incomprehensibly stupid.
And there's no way.
What this whole movie feels like is like the director's like, I have a bunch of great ideas for the first 3 minutes of a porn movie.
Yep.
And that's what he should have done.
And I'm going to grab my porn actor friends and I'm going to have them shoot a bunch of weird 5-minute scenes that would then lead into a porn.
I actually got the impression that the director was like a washed up porn director or something. Maybe he wasn't washed up. Maybe he wanted to expand himself. So he's like, I'm going to make a real movie. And everyone said, you can't do it. You only know porn.
And they were right.
And they were right, because this whole thing, there's like a, you know, quite a bit of sexual tension between the characters. There's like a certain amount of tension.
It's like, it's the kind of sexual tension that you would expect from a pornographic film.
Would lead into a nice pornographic film.
Not real, like,
not
established
a real film.
Like cinematic tension.
This movie is basically like, let's watch all the bad parts of porn, like where nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. And then there's never going to be like any of the good parts, which are like,
nope.
You know, the people doing it. And then the movie's going to end.
I think, by the way, that you're giving that line, she's still kind of hot, I'd still do her, way too much credit, Joe.
Oh, I'm being, like, as charitable as I could be. That's, like, the only way I see that not
that
being super creepy as hell.
That is an utter abortion of a line. That is one of the worst lines in cinematic history.
Yeah.
By far.
It's pretty bad.
Okay, so let's move on to three random new characters. Where have we seen that before? Every few minutes.
Yeah,
but
they just got...
And they're sorority sisters!
Well, one of them is a sister, two of them are initiates, but yes, they're randomly, you know, part of a sorority.
And then she makes it clear that there's one more initiation test, and that they have to both be wearing their swimsuits, which is not a problem, because everyone's always got their swimsuit under their clothes in this
world.
Oh
yeah, they're just ready to go, of course.
So, and then...
By the way, this... The chubby girl points out that, wait, isn't this the lake where the sharks are, or where the shark is? And the sister's like, high five for noticing. And then four down low, and then she just moves the hand away, says, huh. And then they all kind of like awkwardly like stare off for a while. I had Joe rewatch this, and this is just a very,
and
very...
also, whoever's holding the camera... is apparently holding it up to his face, because this is all you hear through the whole scene.
Yeah.
I think I
they
noticed
forgot.
That.
Was it the guard,
or was the cameraman just out of breath?
They forgot to noise gate all of the breathing from the cameraman in this entire movie.
It's like the cameraman did a... It was like the cameraman was the jogger guy, and they're like, okay, you finished jogging. Can you pick up the camera and finish this scene? And he's like, yeah, I can film this scene. I don't have any lines, I can just... hold the camera.
That's possible, too. Like, that's plausible.
Into the camera.
That's possible that they had people on double duty, because this is clearly a low-budget film.
Because no one was an actor!
Well, a certain kind of actor, if you know what I mean.
No one was a good actor! Yeah.
My whole impression... At this point, I made this note. This was my impression, basically, throughout the whole movie. Like, for a softcore porn, there isn't a lot of porn going on, and that Star Wars Holiday at least had VR porn.
VR porn!
My entire impression of this movie was just... It was just there's nothing redeeming. There's nothing that happens. There's no characters. There's no plot.
No, there's no, not.
Like, this makes Piranha 3D, 3DD, look like a shining achievement of film.
Oh, the one thing I will say, the one thing, is that the brunette character is not completely stupid. Like... she kind of acts as Joe called it, the voice of reason in a lot of the scenes. But just being not completely dumb is, like, that's not high praise. That's just she's the only
she
one
who has a bare minimum amount of logic. Basically, what happens in the scene is that she explains to them that they have to spend 10 minutes in the water and go out as far as they can. And if they don't, they can't be sisters. And she says, what could be simpler? But it's not that the simplicity is, like, what they don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't want to die. She says, I'm scared. And then she says, then I guess you're not cut out to be a sister. Like, if you won't be a sister, like all the sorority girls are suicidal, basically. Like, oh, if you're not afraid of death, you can't be a sister, because all the sorority girls are not afraid of death. Like,
I feel like if I was... in a sorority or fraternity and I wasn't responsible for hazing and initiation, that yes, I get that, you know, uncomfortable and awkward situations are common for these kinds of rituals, but this would be very understandable, like, Well, I understand that I'm going to be mocked and humiliated, but I don't want to die. Like,
I mean, people do keep dying during hazing.
Did they die due to shark exorcists?
No, it's like being tied naked to a flagpole in 30-degree weather. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And they die of hypodermia.
Hypothermia.
Of really wet skin.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah.
And then the next scene.
Wait, no, but wait, the next scene at the lake, or?
No.
So what ends up happening here is that the sorority sister gets eaten. Not the initiative.
Yes, the shark somehow attacks the girl who isn't in the water?
Midair chomp, apparently.
This movie's so clever.
It was a very stupid way to get around the fact that they didn't have the means to integrate the shark into the scene.
Yeah,
they just show a flash of the shark that has allegedly jumped out of the water in a way where he'd eat the girl and then fall back into the water.
Like a boomerang. Yeah, they don't show the shark attacks, and that's why there are no shown shark attacks
in this entire movie.
Surrounding circumstances. Yeah, it's kind of speculative.
It's just implied.
So,
and it's not even clear if she dies because, as we've seen before, the shark attacks aren't very devastating in a lot of cases.
No. Nope.
Like, you don't even get a bite. So, anyway.
Not even a scratch.
So, go ahead, Joe.
So, then in this new scene, the father, or the priest, Michael, walks into the room, and there's a girl with a tank top there. I think the brunette friend, the voice of reason. Yeah, yeah. So then she says, "Do I know you?" And he had actually let himself in.
Yep.
And he says, "It's urgent, I see Allie." And she says, "You're not a stalker or anything, are you?" And he says, "I can assure you I'm not a stalker. I'm a priest," which is exactly what a stalker would say. And then she alludes that the last time a priest said he's not a... the last time a priest said that he was the priest, it was at a bachelorette party and it was a stripper. So anyway, she's trying to keep him away as if he's a stalker, but she still let him into the house, he let himself into the house, but she's actually awfully giggly for someone who thinks their friend's about to be stalked, and she just casually mentions that she has that look and all the boys love Allie, and then he starts to explain the shark attack that happened a year ago at this time, and paranormal music plays, and at this point, I'm pretty sure nothing of significance will be delivered in this scene.
And you're correct.
And he just says, like, Allie's fine. She was healed miraculously. Like, the same bullshit we already know. Literally nothing's going on. She's obsessed with water. So what? Like, who gives a fuck? Then the scene ends with, "There's something I need to tell you." And she says, "What?" And then the scene ends and nothing happened.
There's never a point where this is revisited where you learn what needs to be told.
Right. Yeah, he says, "There's something I need to tell you." She says, "What?" This would have been the only time in the movie where they at least had the opportunity to say something new or important, and they don't take it, and the scene ends, and it never gets revisited.
Also, in this scene, you get to see the terrible ADR where they redid the lines for the priest, but there was no attempt to match the lip movements at all. Like, he just redoes the dialogue, and I think he just improvises it. So what you hear on screen is not what you're shown at all.
Nope.
And if you look at a lot of the scenes, this is actually what's happening. Like, a lot of this was redubbed because the first time it was just too bad. So there is actually a worse initial cut of this movie, by the way, which we didn't get to see.
Oh, God.
So that's I think that's kind of the real horror story here. But let's move on.
So that's that. Then the next scene is the carnival scene.
No, wait. There's
more to unpack, like, here.
Okay.
Yeah, the brunette's like, "Oh, something's wrong with Fangs. She always wants to be in the water. Like, she keeps taking baths, and she keeps wanting to be in the lake. And she wants to go to the ocean, but there's no ocean around here." And then she says, "It's almost like she's effed up, like, a lot." Which feels like it's a mistake of a line, but she says it quite confidently. And then the priest nods like that sentence made sense.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you didn't just forget your line or anything.
Now, at one point, she asks what I think is a completely valid question, which is, "What's a shark doing in a lake?" And then the priest says, "Well, sharks aren't normally in a lake, but we're not talking about a normal shark," which is not really a sufficient answer to that question. Like,
total cop out.
What does that mean? Like if I was talking to someone and they were like, well, it's not a normal shark, I'd be like, what do you mean? In what way are they abnormal that they can be there?
Yeah, and then she goes, well, how did it get here? And he goes, well, there was attack here a year ago.
Yep. This is not an adequate explanation for the situation at all.
Two unrelated sentences.
To be fair, we shouldn't necessarily expect the priest to know all this stuff, but it's, I mean, he's doing a poor job at explaining
Lars,
it.
It's like if I said to you, there's a giant space marshmallow in my backyard. And you're like, what? A giant space marshmallow in your backyard? Well, how did it get there? And
well,
it's not a normal space marshmallow. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, yeah, it was there a year ago.
Yeah.
It was there a year ago, Lars.
Chelsea, I'm going to give you a chance to break down the next scene. It's the carnival. It's a hell of a scene.
Okay, so Allie's hair has grown yet another foot.
Whoops.
Fangs.
It's two more feet at this point?
I mean, at this point, it is past her butt, halfway to her knees.
So the director obviously said, we want the hair to keep getting longer.
It was shoulder length at the beginning of the movie. It was halfway down her back during the hitchhiking scene. It's now almost to her knees.
Okay.
And at this point, I thought she was an entirely new character, and then she showed her mouth, and I'm like, oh, braces, cool, good to see you.
Well, to be fair, also, there's lots of new characters all the time, so that's still also not
exactly
unreasonable.
Exactly.
And most of them are blonde.
He has a type. She's walking around this carnival, and she's looking at, like, the goldfish in the carnival game. She's very attracted to water. There's a horror, like a haunted house that has vampires painted on the side of it. Because she has fangs, and they have fangs. And there's a couple who's fighting, who's having a good time slash fighting, but entirely in pantomime. They don't even mouth words at each other. It's like,
yep,
let's go on this ride. Let's look at this thing. I'm going to point to an animal I want, and I'm going to shake my finger at you. No, no, you can't have it. And
they're either
dating, or she's very desperate, and she leans in to kiss him at one point. And he pushes her away, and she, again, like, puts her face in her hands and, like, cries with her shoulders entirely in pantomime.
Yep.
And the whole time they're walking around having this date, Fangs is just in the deep background watching them.
And by the way, the transition between smiley and giddy and happy to crying is immediate. There's no moment of realistic realization, like, oh, I'm surprised by this. This is unexpected. Now I'm sad. It's just giggle, 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 sob, basically.
And they're playing deafeningly loud, like, carnival stock footage noises that don't have anything to do with what's going on screen.
Yeah.
And when the girl gets sad and starts to...
Mm-hmm. At one point, this carnival barker, either offers her an alien balloon or, like, gestures the balloon towards her, and she just pushes it away. Like, how rude.
Also, no carny would ever do that.
No.
That's not why they're in town.
And so, it's so blaringly loud, and then right as they start fighting, it drops dead quiet, and you're like, oh, some dialogue's about to happen. Nope. Fangs just pops out of literally nowhere. Because he looks behind him, he looks ahead of him, there is nothing, and then he turns around again, and she pops up from behind him and bites him on the neck.
Like a zombie, by the way. Not like...
And it's a giant shark fang teeth. It's not like normal vampire fangs.
Yeah.
It's like her whole mouth is just shark teeth.
Yep.
And she chows down. And he yells, ah, shit!
Yeah.
No, he yells, oh, shit! Like, a blonde girl walks in front of him. He yells, oh, shit! And then she bites him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, that's what I say when a blonde girl walks in front of me.
Interesting.
Oh, no, shit.
Well, that's what I say when a blonde girl teleports in front of me.
Yeah, that's true.
Which she can do, I guess.
And as she bites him, the priest runs up.
Yeah, the priest runs over and says something, which is not what you're supposed to say, which is, okay, so if I'm going to say the phrase, the power of Christ blank, what would you fill in there?
Compels you.
Nope. You're supposed to say, apparently, the power of Christ commands you? Has that ever been, like, an acceptable alternative? Or
no,
was that just a mistake?
It's a common misunderstanding that apparently the director made. He says, demon, the power of the Christ commands you, and then thunder rolls, and the candles are burning, like dollar store candles, and clearly he got this idea.
And they're far away from the carnival.
He had just watched a Depeche Mode video, I guess, because the candles are playing and the thunder.
What is it commanding? That's the problem here.
Well, he left it open-ended, but it was his first time trying to do it, like...
Yeah. The scene leaves open-ended, too, by the way. Like, we don't know what actually happened there. It's not an exorcism.
And then he goes to perform an exorcism, but when...
It's the best line of the whole movie!
When he's asked... did anyone get the quote?
Yes! They're trying to exorcise fangs, and it's not working. And the brunette looks dead to camera, goes, "We're gonna need a bigger cross."
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, that was...
It's the worst Jaws reference, and I love it so much.
It was so
We're gonna
bad.
Need a bigger cross.
It was such a bad line.
That's how exorcisms work. The size of the cross is the effect.
That's what I was saying. It's like, what does that have to do with the exorcism? Like,
would
it somehow work if it was like a large cross? Like,
well, yeah, Lars, it's the size of
the cross. The bigger the faith.
Not the fact that this priest has never done an exorcism before.
Yeah, they just
needed
a bigger cross.
Because when he's asked if he knows how to perform one, he says not exactly. He's never actually performed one before. And he just asks the demon, "What kind of demon are you? Why are you torturing this woman? Leave her now." And he says it firmly.
He says, "I haven't done an exorcism, but I've read the sacred sexts."
Oh.
And I double checks it. He says sexts.
So basically the problem is that his cross is a like it from Coldstone, and he needs to have gotta have it.
Yeah.
What a strange requirement. So then the priest tries to strangle Fangs. And it turns out that for the entirety of this scene, she actually wasn't restrained. Because, like, when he struggles with her, she just comes right off of the tree.
But when he goes to hurt her, the brunette actually has to remind him, "No, don't hurt her, because you'll actually hurt her." And the guy, I guess, forgot that the body was still Allie, and it was just, like, a possession. And if he strangles her, she's going to die in real life. And, yeah. Before this, Allie's talking from the demon's perspective very clearly and only mildly demonic. And then she projectile vomits on the priest and says, "Damn it, damn you."
What's weird about this scene, by the way, is it's really claustrophobic. Like, all of the characters are, like, uncomfortably close for some reason. Like, they could have spread the shot out a little bit. It's just they're all, like, kind of, like, up each other's butts
for it.
They're
all touching each other the whole scene.
Yeah. And then the priest has a change of heart, decides to sacrifice himself in order to save Fangs, because apparently the shark can transfer to him. His eyes glow red, which I guess means he's the shark. He bites the brunette, just bites her, and she runs off, and he's like, okay.
Oh, but first he kisses Allie while still fully covered in vomit.
As one does.
Mm-hmm. And then, I'm going to say this very slowly and deliberately, a giant intergalactic space shark proceeds to burn them alive from the sky. That's how that scene ends.
Mm-hmm.
That is the resolution to that scene. A giant intergalactic space shark proceeds to burn them alive from the sky. So the next scene is completely unnecessary. This would have been a not completely illogical point to end the movie just on a major downer note where the shark wins. But instead, there's a pervert scene where another girl who is just another new character at this point, by the way, decides to go suntanning on a cloudy, windy day, not very close to the beach, and gets creeped on by this pervert who goes to take pictures of her when she's asleep.
First, he's hiding behind a tree. And then she takes off her clothes and to reveal that she's wearing a swimsuit, because of course
she
is.
As everyone does.
And then the camera pans up her body and she starts texting. But really, she's just clicking on the screen randomly because you can see the screen and she's not clicking anywhere in particular. Later on, she'll be texting because you can see that she's actually texting people and typing, probably just people she knows, like, hey, I just had to text someone right now for that. We're doing a texting scene. And that's
God, this movie is so stupid.
Yeah. So and that's just, when the guy approaches her.
By the way, this is the scene where the what I call the fart ambience in the background score is playing. Like if you listen to it, the it sounds like the orchestra is having a lengthy fart in the background. It's very distracting once you notice it. And so the guy who's taking the pictures of her, instead of hightailing it, as you should in that situation, if you are going to do that, which you should not, he proceeds to very slowly scroll through all of the pictures of her while hovering the phone over her body.
And they're not actually the pictures he took, because when he was taking the pictures, it was a different angle than it was physically on his phone. And also, her nipples are hard in real life, but they're not hard in the pictures. And yes, I took notice. And so that's also how you know it's...
Joe does the nipple inspection on all the episodes that we review.
Yeah, I'm in charge of the nipple inspection. But what I thought would be really funny, if while he was taking pictures and holding the camera like above her face, is if he accidentally drops the phone on her face.
He would have deserved it at that point. After that, he stops himself from just playing up grabbing her tits, like,
that would be creepy.
4 or 5 times, and he has to really struggle to do it too, like, well, multiple, like, even when you think it's done, he goes back in for another almost grab. So this is just just the perv of the century for no real reason. He's just gross,
and she is dead asleep. She is like in deep REM sleep after like 2 minutes. She was just wide awake texting, and now she's like in a deep sleep. She can't hear him approach, ruffling on the ground, taking picture after picture. Like, she can't hear him breathing. She can't, like, sense him whatsoever.
You can hear the cameraman breathing, but
yeah.
But she can't hear him.
And then she sits up, now fully awake, and he is suddenly gone. And so she just stands up and does stretches, and she has no idea. She picks up all her stuff and goes to leave. Because I guess 4 minutes at the beach is enough time before she's ready to leave. Like, she already got her REM sleep, got taken pictures of by a huge creep. Like, why not leave after only 4 minutes?
On a cloudy day where she's going to tan.
Yeah. So, and that's when the nun is back.
Yeah, the nun from the beginning of the movie shows up. And the lady starts screaming bloody murder at her. But... not because of the knife that she pulls out, because she starts screaming before the knife is pulled out.
Yeah.
Like, just like crying for your life, screaming because a nun is kind of close to you. And then she pulls out the knife. Like, it actually doesn't happen in the right sequence at all.
Yeah.
And all this time, she could have run away. But she chooses not to, so the nun stabs her and kills her. And then licks the knife.
This girl is just unlucky. Like, first the creep pictures, and then I guess the guy was in the right place at the right time, though, because soon she'd be dead. And he wouldn't be able to take his creep shots.
Yeah. So, in a disgusting way, he was lucky to get there the time that he did.
But this girl
I don't understand what
unlucky.
The point of any of that was. Mm-hmm. Like, why was he included?
The filmmaker wanted to recreate his fantasy.
Okay, so what ends up happening then?
God damn
is
it! Well, my two cats are just hit, like, on the counter. Like, get down from there. Get down, Django.
Oh. So okay. So then there's another random woman who shows up, like, very slowly sneaking out of the water, and she's about to bite the nun, but suplexes her into the water instead, and. I don't know who any of these people are except the nun and what? What?
I didn't know Alexa was here and she poked me on the side and I didn't know anyone was there. So I was just like, I thought it was the nun.
Oh, okay.
The nun also licks the knife
Yeah,
6 times.
Yeah, she licks the blade.
And she just goes, Hail Satan.
Yeah, she must really like it at that point.
Hail Satan.
Yeah, and they just, yeah, just hail Satan, yeah. And then, yeah. Back to the dock. The brunette made it out, I guess, bitten by the priest, but alive. And very disoriented, so she does what people do in this movie. She takes off her shirt.
To reveal?
Her swimsuit, obviously.
Her swimsuit, yeah. Of course. Yeah.
You are required to wear a swimsuit under your clothes in this town. That's...
You're talking about the brunette girl on the pier, yeah. Right?
And by the way, I don't mind her doing this as a heterosexual male, but it makes no sense.
Nope.
In context. Like, why is she doing that? Like, and she doesn't take off her pants either. So, like, it's not to go into the water, which she eventually does, but she just takes it off to take it off.
I think the brunette girl is the shark, because the blonde girl says, Emily, Emily, and that's when she takes off her swimsuit. And I guess the brunette girl's name is Emily, so like either her name changed or it's a different brunette girl, I guess. I don't like. I
already forgot what then, it was after you said it, sorry.
So then the blonde girl says, Emily, tell me what's wrong. And then she says, you don't want to know, before diving into the water. And then the shark comes up, but it doesn't eat the girl in the water. The shark actually comes up and dives straight down at like a 90-degree angle. And I guess the exorcist didn't work because it was the first one that he was doing, so that makes sense. And I guess it was Emily that was the shark because she was coming out of the water after she got in, and that's why it was her who was the shark.
That's the end of the movie. That's just it.
And then the credits roll. And some of the names in the credits are Poor Girl, Possessed Girl, and Beach Dad. Do you guys want to take a guess at which one Beach Dad is?
The creepy stalker.
Stalker Beach Dad?
I don't know, and I don't care.
I don't know.
It's just...
Yeah.
But then we get two endings to this movie. The two additional endings.
Now, here's the question. Should we discuss them, or should we let the viewer decide to view them if they want?
I think we let them decide to view them, because there's nothing to discuss.
Yeah, they're totally inconsequential. They kind of vaguely set up the scene for, I guess, a sequel.
I mean, we don't have to discuss it. There's really nothing
there. Yeah, we could discuss it, but the discussion would be that a couple things happen that are irrelevant to the movie.
There's like two more girls that both like sharks.
Yep.
Yay.
So, there is no resolution in this movie.
Ultimately, I was totally uninvested in the film and the characters, and I was very much aware that I was watching a film, or whatever the fuck this shittiness is called, referred to.
Calling it a film, I think, is somewhat of an insult to film. This is, without a doubt, the worst movie I have ever seen. It's just incomprehensibly bad. Every single decision that the director made, and every single decision that thereby the characters make, is just complete nonsense. It's...
Yeah.
The way that I've tried to kind of categorize it in my head is that I think there's kind of three possibilities here. One of them is that Donald Farmer is a troll, and this was supposed to be that bad. I mean, it's possible.
Regarding the way you said he acted about it after it's come out, that kind of seems like the most likely.
It is possible.
Who filmed it? I mean, who funded it?
Suicidal Productions.
Right. Apparently, he's done other movies. He did Cannibal Hookers, Demon Queen, and Savage Vengeance as well.
Cannibal Hookers sounds amazing in the worst kind of way.
Cannibal Hookers. He did Compelling Evidence. He did Scream Dream. He did An Erotic Vampire in Paris, which makes sense.
I mean, maybe he's just carving out a very specific genre.
Yeah, he did Invasion of the Scream Queens, Demolition Highway, Bollywood and Vine, Red Lips 2, and Red Lips 1, Eat the Living. He did I Spill Your Guts. He did Deadly Run, Cool as Hell, Billy, The Early Years, and The Strike, as well as some others.
Okay, so I think this counts against the idea of him being a troll, because that's...
He's just into shitty movies.
Yeah, the thing about being a troll is that there's a certain kind of diminishing rewards when it comes to the, you know, the results of your efforts.
Yeah.
And I think that if your goal was just to piss people off with a terrible movie, that you probably wouldn't make like 15 of them.
Although, this is a horrible, horrible movie, but if you Google Shark Exorcist on YouTube, there's 300 people talking about it.
Like right now?
No, not exactly at this moment, but I mean, if you Googled, you know, other movies that are just boring and maybe not horrifically bad, no one gives a shit about them. They fade into obscurity. I mean, if your goal is to make something so terrible people can't not talk about it, he's succeeded.
Mission accomplished.
Guys, check this out. He made Cannibal Hookers in 1987, and it got 2.2 out of 10 on IMDb. And then he remade Cannibal Hookers in 2018.
Okay.
So they remade it, even though it got, like, 2 out of 10.
Well, maybe he wanted a better shot at it. I don't know. Like, so that's my first theory, which I think may or may not be true. I don't think it is.
Cannibal Hookers.
My second theory is that a lot of these people are his family and friends. I think there's at least one family member on staff, and all they're doing is they're just making a movie for the fun of it.
I'm going to post a picture from Cannibal Hookers for you guys. Let's see if this works.
But my idea is that although it is funded by a motion picture company, that it was just something for people to do just to have fun. And if they had fun and they enjoyed it, that's fine. As a commercial release, though, it's still dreadful. Like, it doesn't make it a better movie. I would just feel better about it.
I mean, there's movies like Sleepaway Camp where they don't know what they're doing and there's a lot of drop plot lines and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. And if it was not for the last 2 minutes of Sleepaway Camp, no one would know or care about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a weird thing where you try to get a cult following of, like, I'm going to be so bad that I'll be the next Sleepaway Camp, Troll 2, etc. Yeah. Like, there's almost a success now. Like, well, it's really hard to be good at something, so I'll try really hard to be bad. Because that gets you just as much attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My third theory, and I think this is probably correct, is that this movie is just exactly what it's supposed to be, which is an attempt to make a good horror movie that has failed in every possible way. Where, like, this wasn't a troll, this wasn't just some fun with the friends kind of thing. This was a serious attempt to make a good movie, and it just sucks. I'm gonna vote for number three. What are your guys' votes?
Probably number three.
I vote one.
So you think he's?
I want to believe.
You think this is a very stealth troll without? The problem I have with it is it's just like there's like no, there's almost not even a hint of irony in it. Like usually with a troll, there's a sense of winking.
I don't think it's necessarily an expert troll. I think it was an attempt at trolling.
So you think he's just like he's a troll, but he's kind of bad at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he attempted to make a bad movie and made a worse movie than he intended, rather than he intended to make a good movie and made a movie this bad.
Yeah. Another I just thought of another alternative, which is, what if he just finds this whole thing so amusing that this is just kind of what he's decided to do with his career and just commit to
just
making
make bad movies?
Yeah, just to make shit just because it just amuses him. Like, he knows that this is bad, and that's probably why he would encourage people to review it and to tell them about their reviews and stuff, which I'm going to do. And Donald, if you're listening to this, I enjoyed your movie for many, many reasons. Probably not the reasons that most people would think they'd want to enjoy a movie for cinematic reasons, but I mean,
I have a fifth theory.
Well, let me, real quick, it's pretty rare that a movie makes me say without hesitation that it's the worst movie I've ever seen. Like, I'm pretty cautious with that award. So, as dubious as it is, I do award that to you, sir. Chelsea, you said you had something?
Fifth theory. He enjoys being around hot girls and having them in states of semi-unclothedless. and was like, uh-huh, I'm making a movie. What's the script about? Don't worry about it. Just worry about your scenes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Bring your bathing suit to every scene.
Oh, yeah. He's just like,
Be ready to take your clothes off.
I'll pay you guys the normal rate. You don't actually have to do any, like, nude scenes or anything. You just chill and just
No, you don't have to audition. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. I saw your headshot. You're good.
Yep.
Can you swim? Okay, we'll just have you go, like, ankle deep. It'll be fine.
I don't think that that's I would doubt that that's true, but that's a very amusing theory. Like,
I'm kind of leaning towards that now.
I mean, there's aspects of this movie that are just very specific fetishes.
I'm kind of leaning towards that.
Yeah.
Like, mentally unhandicapped girl who doesn't quite know what's going on.
Necrophilia.
Like, the somnophilia thing and the necrophilia thing. Like,
the guy at the end who, takes pictures of her and she's asleep.
Yeah,
so
creep
the
shots.
Voyeurism.
Yeah, or like, you know, this girl is going to stalk like an ungrateful boyfriend and then like attack him. And like, there's a lot, like I said, that feel like the first 5 minutes of a porn movie.
Yeah.
Okay, but theories aside, just looking at the film as a film, it's a 0 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
Just a flat 0. It's...
Yeah, flat 0.
Yeah, it's a failure in every possible way.
I'd give it a 1 because of some of the characters are attractive and they look nice.
Okay, so let me give you a parameter here. Assuming that the characters' looks do not factor in.
0.
Okay.
You can't give the director credit for the attractiveness of the actors. He had nothing to do with it.
He selected those actors.
Also, some of them are genuinely attractive. Like, I think the brunette was gorgeous, but...
Allie was cute and sort of like a washed up...
A lot of them are like, kind of like...
Homely?
Used up, kind of like, you know, been through a lot of adult films kind of attractive, where it's like... They've seen some shit. Kind of attractive, like, where I don't know, like, they're not the kind of women that you bring home to your mom kind of attractive, you know, just really, really salt of the earth, kind of done a lot of cocaine and just had a life kind of women.
Speaking of which, I gotta go.
What? You gotta go do your daily coke?
Just kidding.
It's a bit late to start, dude.
The night is young. I'm just kidding. I don't do cocaine.
Mm.
Yeah, sure, buddy. Okay. I believe you.
That personality is entirely natural. Okay.
So, were there any actors or scenes or parts of the movies that you guys liked?
We're going to need a bigger cross. I mean...
it's a funny line.
Golden.
I don't think it's funny in the way that he intended it.
I think the joke was it's a Jaws joke because we're a shark movie. And I got it. Like, we need X tool to defeat X villain. Ours is not sufficient.
I guess, man. Okay, let's. I'll be charitable and I'll give him that one.
I liked when there were random scenes that just ended and there was no point in having them because it made me laugh.
Okay, are there any scenes in here that were not unintentionally amusing, though, to you guys?
No.
Okay.
Honestly, no.
Yeah, in terms of
not a
scenes,
single one.
Yeah, the scenes that the director was trying to make good and you appreciated, not a one. Okay.
I mean, the thing is, I think the scene with like the jogger where he vomited on himself and said he'd fuck the corpse, I think it's exactly what he wanted it to be, which is guy is jogging, sees a girl, she's so hot he'd still fuck her anyway. That's gross.
Oh.
Because he vomited on himself. You're not supposed to admire that guy or look up to him. Like, I think it accomplished its goal.
Well,
I didn't appreciate it.
I think that's a good example of a principle in movies, which is show, don't tell.
Yes.
And they really told you about his necrophilia. And it's just so casual about it, too. Like, it's not like...
Yeah.
Like, he's not like... He doesn't sound depraved. He just sounds like very casually, oh, yeah, I'd still hit it.
Who's he talking to?
Himself, I guess.
Himself, I guess.
Part of me just doesn't care. Part of me just, like, feels like there isn't an answer even if I did care.
The whole thing, it's like the main theme of the movie that doesn't change from the start to finish is just, like, who the fuck cares about any of the shit that's going on? Like,
yep.
Who cares?
I'd say from the reading of the title, Shark Exorcist, which doesn't accurately describe the movie at all, because it's not an exorcist shark, it's an exorcism of a shark, to the very last scene is just awful.
It was also so bad. I mean, there was one thing that I wanted to say about the opening scene that I didn't say, where the nun is walking through the cemetery for the first time. It gives a creepy vibe in the same way that the Cookie Monster gives a cookie vibe. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
Oh, I now want to give off nothing but cookie vibes.
Yep. If the Cookie Monster was giving off cookie vibes, that's the way in which this scene is giving off creepy vibes.
It's like that thing we've talked about where it just hits you over the head with it, like with the force of an anvil. It doesn't really...
With the subtlety of a truck coming at you.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So...
Oh, my God. What a fucking awful movie. What a fucking horrible, horrible excuse for a film.
No, you know what? I disagree. You're calling it a film? I don't know if I can. I'm sorry.
I know.
Where's the plot? Where's the resolution? Where's the conflict? Well, there is kind of conflict. Sort of. I mean, it's not clear what the shark's motivations are. Or who the shark is, or what it wants. Like, what was the shark trying to accomplish? Was it just trying to eat people? Was that that was it? I mean,
that's it. It wants sacrifices. That's all we know.
Also, why don't any of the characters kind of like get the hell out of Dodge once the stuff starts happening?
Because they're not. They're not real people. They're just figments of the director's imagination. They're living out his quest.
Also,
they don't have any substance.
If you're a priest, you'd probably want to stay away from that kind of stuff. Like,
if you're a priest, stay away from this film.
If you're anyone, stay away from this film. Boy. So yeah, that was Shark Exorcist, and I can thankfully say that every other movie is probably better than this. And it's kind of made me appreciate the rest of cinema a little bit more. And I hope I never have to watch it again.
Yeah, that's it. That sums it up.
Okay. So I think we can go ahead and call it quits.
Yep.
Chelsea, you run a podcast called the Stupid Sequels Podcast.
Stupid Sequels Podcast. Yes.
Where can people go to find good movies?
You can find us at Stupid Sequels Podcast on Facebook, on Twitter, on Tumblr, on Instagram. Pretty easy to find. I have my own Discord server, and you guys just did our Christmas episode, the Star Wars Holiday Special, so that'll be linked right towards the top of our Instagram page, so check that out.
In the description as well. And your show is kind of like the episodes we've done with you, but it's a little different. So can you kind of explain what that's about?
Yeah, there's a little more of a comparative aspect to it, because with these movies, I feel like there's nothing good to cling to.
Nope.
And our aspect is kind of, there was clearly something good to begin with for you to make a sequel, and you obviously had something good. And why did it go horribly wrong? Was it a lack of care? Was it a lack of expertise? Was it a lack of materials? And kind of in the same way where Hollywood wants to cling to movies that they know are going to be sure things by continuing to do remakes and sequels and TV specials of things that have already been successful, they seem to not have a grasp on what actually made them successful. And is that just that the people who are making movies have an entire different view of what they think makes things successful? Or are we as audiences not even sure what we're attracted to in films? So when we come back to sequels trying to get the same thing, are we doomed to always be disappointed?
And here we're just talking shit on movies like that are bad.
That too. Yeah.
The answer is yes.
To what?
To everything. To all of it. Just yes.
And the answer to everything in this film is just, I don't know.
No.
Just
fuck yeah.
Yep, that's a reference to an episode that if you're watching these in order, you will understand. But for everyone else, they don't know what you're doing right now.
No. It's just part of my vernacular now, and you'll just have to wait and listen to find out why.
It's kind of cringy out of context, Joe. I mean, like...
Well, so just don't put it in then, Lars.
Oh, now I have to. I mean...
Oh, God damn it.
Well, So if you want to go ahead and find Chelsea Sanders' Stupid Sequels podcast, in which she has a rotating set of guests, including us, this last December for the Christmas episode, you can go ahead and check out the links in the description. Likewise, if you want to follow us on social media, or if you want to check out more episodes, go to t1podcast.com. That has all of our links. For business inquiries, fan mail, guest suggestions, including yourself if you're a notable figure, and just if you just want to say hi, or if you just want to criticize us, like you always do, you can send us an email.
Here's the thing to anyone wanting to criticize us. You can never criticize us harder than we have already criticized ourselves.
Yep.
So fuck you.
Yeah. You already lost that game. Sorry. I mean, we joke around all the time about ourselves. So you don't really have anything on us, but you can try. I mean, I'm happy to.
Fuck you. Yeah. If you're trying to criticize us.
Why don't you criticize Joe instead of me? It's moments like these that I think you might want to criticize Joe instead of me. That's fine. Right. But you can send it to firstpodcastever@gmail.com. And if you've been tuning in for a while, you appreciate what we're putting out there, you want to help the show succeed in the future, you can head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/T1podcast. Every dollar helps, and that's about gonna do it to it. Chelsea, can you sign us off?
Yeah. When in doubt, get a bigger cross.